Penguin Random House Audio presents. The name of this band is REM, a biography by Peter Ames Carlin. Read for you by Mike Chamberlain. For Claire, Extremely Much. Introduction: The Things They Wouldn't Do. Even from the start, you would know them by the things they wouldn't do. The refusals began before they got together, when Peter Buck, a rock and roll obsessive who loved playing guitar, resolved never to join a band. Guys in bands were assholes, he said, and he wanted no part of it. When they were teenagers, drummer Bill Berry nearly walked out of a jam session because he had taken an instant dislike to his schoolmate Mike Mills, who he just discovered was about to play bass with him. Young Mike and Bill wound up becoming best friends anyway, which helped Bill talk singer Michael Stipe out of his initial refusal to make music with Mike, who was falling down drunk when they first met. When the quartet came together in the college town of Athens, Georgia, in the winter of 1980, they at first refused to perform at the birthday party where they made their famous debut. Soon they would be known by their name, REM, and by the other things they wouldn't do. They also established themselves as a uniquely artful band, impressive enough to win bookings in Athens clubs that spring. Those led to gigs in other college towns, in Atlanta, and then all over the Southeast. It took only 2 years for the band to get signed by the prominent independent label IRS Records, becoming recording artists with a new litany of options and opportunities they could rebuff. It was a key part of REM's identity and their philosophy of music, art, and life. The things people wanted them to do, or expected them to do, or insisted they do, that they would have no part of. None. Not happening. Nope. Not that they weren't capable of changing their minds, because they were. But on their own time, in their own way, when they were ready. Which is why they allowed themselves to be talked into opening for the Police at New York's Shea Stadium in August 1983. It wasn't something they felt comfortable doing, and they didn't enjoy it one bit, they said. But it did lead to their getting a shot on a national television show that fall. Peter Buck and Mike Mills appeared on the local New York talk show Live at 5, the day before the Shea concert, and bumped into staffers from NBC's Late Night with David Letterman, a talk show that taped in the studio across the hall. The staffers turned out to be REM fans and asked if the band might be interested in coming on their program. We said yes, as long as we didn't have to lip sync and all that, Peter told a writer from Athens Nightlife a few months later. So we gave them the names of the people to call. The official request came through their record company a few weeks later. The musicians were thrilled. In the fall of 1983, their band had been together for just 3 years. Their first full-length album, Murmur, had been out for only a few months. They were spending the vast majority of their time on the road in a used Dodge Tradesman van, hauling from one rock and roll club to another. Late Night was not just the hippest talk show on network television. It was also a conduit to millions of young, music-loving viewers. For REM, a post-punk quartet from a tiny college town in northeast Georgia, it was an enormous opportunity. It was also a surprising time for their lead singer to decide that he didn't want to answer any questions from Late Night's popular host, David Letterman. As they became full-fledged recording artists, the band focused on the new array of expectations they couldn't tolerate. They wouldn't write songs with traditional structures or craft lyrics that could be parsed for literal meaning. Assuming you could pick out what was being said, which you probably couldn't, because REM wouldn't mix the vocals above the instruments and also wouldn't include a lyric sheet with their records. They wouldn't work with a producer who wanted to make their songs more radio-friendly. When the time came to promote their records on the road, The band refused to tour as an opener for most of the successful bands that offered them a shot at their larger audiences. They made occasional exceptions, as when they spent a week playing short sets in arenas and stadiums on the Police's 1983 tour. But they disliked the experience so intensely that they vowed never to do it again. Other acts asked. The executives at IRS, who understood the promotional possibilities, keened for a yes. REM held firm. No, no, and no. When they started making promotional videos for their records, Michael Stipe wouldn't lip-sync his vocals for the camera, though that was the standard practice in virtually all popular videos. When the former art student turned singer started overseeing the production of their music videos, he refused to make clips that resembled anything else being aired on MTV, opting instead to make avant-garde art films, often abstract to the point of formlessness, all but guaranteeing they would never be broadcast. A refusal of another sort, but a refusal just the same. David Letterman was a music fan who enjoyed chatting on the air with the artists he brought onto his show. Ordinarily, a band's singer serves as the front man in interviews as well as on stage, so the late-night staff assumed the host would address his questions to REM's singer. But then Michael resolved that he didn't want to speak on the show. The singer was feeling shy. He didn't have anything to say that wasn't in his lyrics. The late-night producers found this surprising, but told that the band's guitarist would be happy to step in, they said, "Okay, fine." When their song was over, Peter could join Letterman at the desk where he sat for the bulk of the show. But wait, because Peter didn't want to sit down all on his own. Couldn't bassist Mike Mills come with him? Well, no, because Letterman hated trying to interview two people at once. It made him nervous, not knowing where to look. The show's staffers worked out a compromise. When the time came to chat, Letterman would walk over to where the band was set up and ask his questions there. Peters said that would be acceptable. They had their reasons for being so stubborn. Rock music, like the rest of the culture, was an ebb tide in the early 1980s. Synthetic sounds, corrupt ideals, a catalog of gestures and poses designed to signal rebellion while actually enforcing the rigid conformity brought to bear by the various industrial, political, and social authorities. REM wanted nothing to do with any of it. They were too smart, too confident, too in love with what they did to want to change it in order to get ahead. That's what their litany of refusals signaled, anyway. And for the people who got it, who knew why saying no to the prevailing culture was so important, it mattered. The day of the Letterman show, the members of REM were incredibly nervous. Once they did their run-through for the cameras, they went back to the dressing room and felt the pressure of the moment slap them in the face. They were going to be on national television. For a band from a small town with only one album and one EP on an indie label and a sum total of zero hit songs to their credit, it was a big leap. An audience in the millions. They had some friends in their dressing room and a couple of cases of beer, so they cracked those open and started drinking, figuring that would calm them down. At one point, the door swung open and David Letterman peered in, wanting to say hi and figure out what they could talk about when he came over to chat on the show. He was friendly and welcoming, which settled them down a little. But when Bill got up to find the men's room and saw the super glamorous Italian actress Sophia Loren sitting by herself in a dressing room smoking a cigarette, he felt his heart leap into his mouth. When she looked back at him, he recalled a few months later, "I just lost it. I almost threw up on the spot." During the taping a couple of hours later, Letterman looked into the camera and started talking about the band from the tiny town of Athens, Georgia. He hoisted a copy of their new album, Murmur. The Los Angeles Times had just named it one of the five best records of the year, he told his audience. We're happy to have them making their national television debut with us tonight, he continued. Please
sample complete. Ready to continue?